This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now the pro-life news.
This is your AFA Indiana News Minute. Walgreens is being sued for firing a pharmacist for refusing to dispense abortion-inducing drugs, such as Plan B. Pharmacist Dr. Philip Hall says he was fired from a Walgreens in Jamestown, Tennessee, in violation of his constitutionally and statutorily protected rights to freedom of religion. Dr. Hall, a Baptist, entertains profound religious and moral objections to dispensing abortifacients. For 6 years, Walgreens respected Dr. Hall's religious beliefs and gave him only favorable reviews for his work performance. But in August 2013, Walgreens did an about-face and tried to force Dr. Hall to dispense Plan B in violation of his beliefs. When Dr. Hall indicated his intent to continue following the internal procedures that accommodated his beliefs, Walgreens fired him. There's more online at afain.net.
The next 40 Days for Life campaign in Indianapolis is almost here. Featured speaker Monica Kelsey, founder of Living Exceptions, will help kick off the campaign at 3 p.m. Sunday, March 2nd at Little Sisters of the Poor, 2345 86th Street in Indianapolis. The actual prayer vigils will begin March 5th and run through April 13th. For more information, go to 40daysindy.org. That's numeral 4, numeral 0, DAYSINDY.org.
To use a football analogy, the second half has just started in the State House, and I have invited to join us via telephone Indiana Right to Life's lobbyist in the State House, Cindy Noe. Thank you so much for joining us today, Cindy.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and you are right. We are ready for the second half.
If there's anyone who is scratching their heads at this point who may recall Sue Swayze having served us in this capacity in previous legislative sessions, I just want to let you know that she has taken a job with the governor's administration, and we're really glad for her that she could do that. She left behind big shoes to fill, and Cindy has certainly risen to the occasion. We have some good news to share with you as we bring you up to speed on the pro-life legislation that's pending. But Cindy, before we do, I just want to let our listeners know that had we been recording this last year, I would have been calling you Representative Noe. And for any who think that their votes don't matter, you lost a heartbreaker last fall.
I did. I think it was like 44 votes.
44 votes. So
I'm in a new season of life and advocating for Right to Life has been a big part of that new season, which I'm really enjoying.
Well, I want to take just a moment here to thank you for the many years that you served in the State House and have a tremendous pro-life voting record. You have risen to the occasion, both as a representative and now as an advocate for the unborn. And you bring that special insight with you from having been in the caucus and, sitting at the voting buttons, having to press the buttons. So I appreciate your experience and look forward to working with you in sessions that are coming up. But let's turn our thoughts to this year's session. We shared with our listeners, Cindy, before the session started, several of the initiatives that we were going to be working on. And I'd just like to go through the bill list, if that's okay. And you can bring our listeners up to speed on what's pending, what's not, and if there's any action that they need to take in order to move this legislation along. So let's start in the Senate. The first was Senate Bill 268. That was a piece of legislation that was sponsored by Senators John Brodin and Tom Wiest.
That legislation introduced a mandatory adoption subsidy payment for families who adopted children. It's really well recognized that an adopted child brings new responsibilities as well as financial demands to a family. And this was an attempt to really help those families who wanted to adopt a child but needed some assistance on the financial end of it to make it work for their family. The bill was assigned to the Committee on Appropriations, and this is a bill that Governor Pence is very, very much in favor of. I think this session, having it go to the Committee on Appropriation, was a recognition that Senator Kenley, who chairs that committee, has for all bills, and this being a short session, a non-budget session, those bills that come with a pretty heavy price tag, and this one did, it was in the range of, I think, $8 to $26 million, depending on how the final version of the bill would pass. This was the session to run it up the flagpole, let the legislators know that it's there, et cetera, and be really well positioned to probably look at something very much like this in the next session, which will be a budget session. So that's what's happened. It's been trotted out. Legislators are getting used to it, beginning to think about the idea, beginning to recognize the need, but it will not go much further than that probably this time. And I can personally attest, I have 13 grandchildren, which I think you know, Kathy. What I don't know if you know is that of those 13, five of them are adopted.
Wow.
They were adopted, taken out of their homes as young children, and their therapeutic adoptions through the state of Indiana. And I can just tell you from firsthand experience that those children need to have some services and provisions in life to really hopefully get them stabilized to a point that they really can become, you know, contributory, participatory, nurturing, and in my way of thinking, God-fearing adults.
Exactly. Well, I can certainly identify with people in this situation, having firsthand knowledge myself in my own family. So this is certainly a piece of legislation that is very worthy, and we're glad to hear that it'll be given a second look in subsequent legislative sessions. So that's kind of the way the process works in some situations. So we're glad for your insight there, Cindy. And let's move on to Senate Bill 292, which in my opinion is probably, if not the most, at least one of the most important pieces of legislation that our legislators are looking at this year. And just tell us what that bill's all about and where we stand.
Well, the bill has changed quite a bit. Some pieces of it have been amended out. The bill in its current form, and it has passed from the Senate, and it passed by a nice margin. I think it was 34 to 14, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right.
Headed for the House, and I believe that Representative Washburn will be very involved in ushering it through the House. But from my way of thinking, what this bill does, the main emphasis of this bill, is it tightens the language of admitting privileges that was passed into law several years ago. However, there were no provisions, for instance, that the admitting privileges would be in writing, or that the admitting privileges for either the doctor doing the proceedings or some other doctor who has admitting privileges in the state of Indiana and would allow this abortionist to use his admitting privileges, that those would be in writing. And then that they would also be filed at the abortion clinic as well as the State Department, so that there would be transparency and accountability. And in my way of thinking, this is the main reason that this is needed. Probably many of your listeners know that in Indiana there are 9 abortion clinics. 5 of those abortion clinics are individual clinics. And that is where the bulk of our concern resides, because the doctors tending to patients at those clinics are not residents of Indiana. They drive or fly in to do their day of procedures, and then they fly or drive back out. And there aren't, I can't think of any other medical procedures that you would go to a doctor to have something of a surgical nature done and then not be able to get back to that doctor on pretty short notice if needed. So as a backup plan, we would like the doctor to have admitting privileges or be in agreement with a doctor who does have admitting privileges here in Indiana, so that there would be a backup plan. There would be at least a touch point for that woman if she has complications after the procedure.
Right. And to give a specific example, the abortionist that performs abortions primarily in northern Indiana allegedly lives in Creed, Illinois, at least out of state. And his work week consists of doing abortions in Gary, South Bend, and Fort Wayne. Then he returns to his residence out of state. So this is a significant step in the right direction. Allen County, in which the county that Fort Wayne is located in, has a county ordinance that requires that the backup physician be registered with the Allen County Health Department, but that was not the case for the rest of the state. So this just brings the rest of the state in line with keeping a record of who the backup physician is and making that information more readily available to the woman who has an abortion, as you rightly pointed out, Cindy, so that if she has a complication, she at least knows the name of the doctor and who his backup physician is, as well as the people who might be treating her in an emergency situation, because then they can get the information about what happened during the procedure. If the abortionist had any reason for alarm or any indications that there might be a problem, et cetera. So this is primarily focused on the health and well-being of women. Of course, we would prefer they don't choose an abortion, but we care very much about them, even should they choose an abortion procedure, and we want them to be taken care of. So that is moving along, and we're very glad to hear that that stands a good chance of being passed by the House, and then it'll go to the governor's desk, and I have no doubt that he will quickly sign it into law, and I think that should go into effect if all things go according to plan July 1st. Is that right?
That is correct, Kathy.
Okay. Let's move on to the third pro-life-related bill that was introduced in the Senate, and that had to do with coerced abortions. That was Senate Bill 228.
The background on that is Senator Toms was kind enough, saw a need for this bill, and it was asking for a summer study committee to look at the number of times that women are coerced into having an abortion and the impact that that would have on their lives, etc. Senator Toms did not call the bill down on seconds, and it's one of those reality checks. You just think, okay, what do we have the possibility of achieving this session? And due to the summer study committee status of the bill, et cetera, with what we thought we could realistically bring over the line and make a touchdown to carry on your sports comparison, we asked Senator Toms not to call that bill down. It is always there and something that we can go back and readdress later on. But this session just seemed to already have a lot of moving parts out there, and we wanted to recognize and acknowledge that, and we did that and acted accordingly.
Well, this is Kathy Humbarger in the studio with you today. Thank you so much for joining us. And with me via telephone is Indiana Right to Life lobbyist Cindy Noe. Cindy served in the capacity of representative for several years, and after a heartbreaking defeat in the general election last fall, has moved on to what I believe is a new calling in her life, and that is speaking for the unborn and advocating, using what she learned as a representative in the halls of the State House to move forward pro-life legislation. So, Cindy, we want to move over to the House side in the second half of the program, but for those who may not quite understand the importance of the timing of all this, what is the significance of the halfway mark in a legislative session?
The first half, bills are proceeded through what they call their house of origin. So Senate bills proceed through the Senate, House bills proceed through the House. We are just returning back to the Senate after having several days off. When legislators go home, people at the State House take those bills that passed in the House, get them over to the Senate, and those bills that passed in the Senate, get them over to the House, and start that engine moving forward again, where the bills will be handled in the other body. And at the end of this period, then those bills that are passed in the same fashion in both the House and the Senate will go on to the governor's office. Those bills that are amended in the second chamber will then have to go back to the original chamber for a conference committee where they decide, okay, what differences are there? What do we want this final product to look like? And hopefully have agreement at that point on a final product, and then it also will go to the governor. So this was sort of the halftime where the bills are taken to the other chamber, and the same process then is started once again where the bills are heard in committee, brought to the floor if they pass out of committee, and move forward to a final vote in that chamber.
So if the bills that we've talked about so far originated in the Senate, if they didn't pass out of the Senate, or the bills that we're going to be talking about didn't pass out of the House, which was their chamber of origin, by the halftime, they die for the session, right?
That is true.
Okay, let's move on to the House. And I'm glad to say that both bills that are pro-life related have made it out of the House. The first is House Bill 1123, which was another significant piece of legislation for us this year, especially in light of the Affordable Care Act.
This is about consistency and clarity. Many people, if not most, in Indiana get their insurance either as a state employee through the state, or they will be getting it on the federal exchange now that Affordable Care has come on, or they will be buying it in the private marketplace. And the Bill 1123 simply brings that third way you can get your insurance through the private marketplace in alignment with and consistent with the insurance that will be offered on the federal exchange as well as state employees.
I understand that that's important, but what connection does that have to people who are concerned about life issues?
Well, the first two I mentioned, state employees and the federal exchange, do not have a mandatory portion covering elective abortions.
Okay.
They are more restrictive in that they cover abortions from rape, incest, or
life of the mother.
Something that's necessary to avert the pregnant woman's death or substantial impairment. And this bill brings the third marketplace, individual marketplace, into alignment with those other two as far as the issue of abortion.
Okay, so that is a very good thing. Now, as I understand it, individuals can still buy what we refer to as a rider. In other words, if someone buys their insurance policy, abortion coverage does not automatically come along with that insurance coverage, but as with any other special thing that they might want to add to their policy, they can add a rider, but they will have to pay for that with their own money. So the significant part of this to me is that this prevents our taxpayer dollars from funding abortion, at least in this way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, Representative Carbaugh from up in your area sits on the Insurance Committee, which is the committee that heard this bill. And I thought he really stated in a way that it was very clear to people, because they were asking, well, how would you get this rider, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He said, well, you know, you'll probably have a form where you get your accident and sickness policy, and then it'll have this list of riders. Do you want dental? Do you want this? Do you want that? Do you want abortion coverage? And so he said it'll be a box that people will check off if they would like that rider, as they would with any other rider.
Right. Okay. So a very common sense bill passed, I think, overwhelmingly with bipartisan support. Excuse me?
80-14
out of the House and now goes over to the Senate. We don't anticipate any problems in the Senate with this bill, so that should be going to the governor's desk.
Yeah. Senator Walker will be the sponsor on this. Senator Holdman up from your neck woods is going to be a co-sponsor.
Wonderful. Okay, so we're seeing success with that piece of legislation. Regular listeners to this program know that one of our concerns to protect life has to do with the very, very early stages. And we've had guests on the program previously that have talked about cutting-edge technology that uses stem cells both in research and treatment. And we've gone to great lengths to make certain that everybody understands that adult stem cells are perfectly within the pro-life concern for the unborn, because that does not require the death of a very tiny embryo, whereas embryonic stem cell research and treatments cause the death of a preborn baby at the embryonic stage. So House Bill 1253, some of our listeners may remember, went through a similar language, went through the legislature a number of years ago, which created an organization that was going to oversee umbilical cord banking. And Even though umbilical cord blood, one may think, has to do with an unborn baby, actually, after the baby is born, is very rich in adult stem cells. And technology has come up with a way to harvest those adult stem cells from the umbilical cord and use them not only in research, but also in treatment. You can actually bank your own adult stem cells. And there are, I can't remember the number, but an umbilical cord is packed with these adult stem cells. So you can bank those not only for your own use, but you can later on, if you should have some injury or disease that would require adult stem cell treatment, but it would also allow those stem cells to be used, matched with others who may not have their stem cells banked. And it would be similar to matching organs for transplant and that kind of thing. So back when this passed in the first place, Cindy, I believe you were probably serving as a representative, and you may or may not recall, because I think this passed overwhelmingly with bipartisan support then, but it established an organization that was supposed to oversee this. For whatever reason, that did not turn out to be the best way to handle this, and not much was done with umbilical cord blood banking. And so this piece of legislation, which was authored by Representative Denny Zent, moves the ball down the court. I guess we're using a lot of sports analogies this morning, but in terms of making progress in this area. Do you have anything to add, Cindy?
You are exactly right. I do remember voting on this. I believe it was at that time, Representative Peggy Welsh, who offered the bill. And it was really the first in-depth look I personally had at the stem cell cord blood and what miraculous things these stem cells do. And so it was very educational. I do believe, as you said, this bill really moves that whole concept down the field.
Right.
It, I believe, goes no longer will be under FSSA, but rather under the Health Department, which
exactly
to me seems to make more sense. So it is going to be a significant move in the right direction for the proper use of stem cells. And I just applaud Denny Representative Zent for being so forward-thinking with this.
We're delighted, too. So out of the five pro-life initiatives that were introduced either in the House or the Senate, we have three that are still moving ahead, and we're very pleased with that. We think they're going to be significant in addressing our concern for life in the state of Indiana, which, by the way, I'll just throw in, Indiana has been ranked as the eighth most pro-life state in the nation by Americans United for Life. That rating just came out earlier this week. And Cindy, I think that is certainly evidence of the fact that our legislators have been working hard. We still have some ground to go, but to be ranked eighth by a prestigious pro-life advocacy group like Americans United for Life is significant.
It is. And I think it is such a good representation of who Hoosiers are at heart.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. We're looking now, just to recap, Senate Bill 292, which requires abortion providers to register with the Indiana Department of Health, either their admitting privileges or the admitting privileges information for the physician that they have a relationship with in the county in which they perform abortions or a county adjacent to that county. That's moving ahead. And we're very, I don't want to say confident, but very hopeful that that will pass in the House. We also have two House bills moving. One is House Bill 1123, which has to do with making certain that any insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act does not automatically cover abortions, and also the umbilical cord blood bank. House Bill 1253. Cindy, is there anything our listeners should do in an effort to get these bills to the governor's desk?
Well, I can tell you my sidekick down at the State House is Dick Thompson, former Senator Thompson, and we are going to be meeting with Senator Paul tomorrow, who chairs the Insurance Committee in the Senate, about House Bill 1123, and our plea will be to get a hearing for that bill, as well as Senate Bill 292 will be coming from the Senate to the House, and we will be contacting, hopefully sitting down with the Representative Dermody, who chairs the Public Policy Committee, which is where we believe this bill will be assigned. and to once again ask for a hearing for 1123 as well in 1253, wherever that goes. I think that might be Health Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in the process of getting the bills as they've come from the other chamber in the right committee and then heading to that committee chair's office to sit down and make our case.
And it never hurts for our listeners to contact their representatives and senators and encourage them to support these bills, because even though you know your senator or representative is going to be supportive, they still need to hear from you, because it can be a lonely place in Indianapolis. And if you don't know your constituents are with you, that can be a very difficult position to be in. So as a former representative, would you encourage our folks to just contact their representatives and senators and encourage them if they are on our side, and if they're not, just respectfully and kindly ask them to consider supporting this legislation?
You've got it. I mean, representatives and senators, they know that they are there as an extension of the people they represent. And, you know, by and large, the vast majority of them want to do a good job of that. And hearing either encouraging words or words that help educate yourself on those who are not for the bill and why, you know, that just, both of those things help greatly in finally making the best decision for Hoosiers when you're down on that floor and it's a yay or nay vote right now.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Cindy. We're completely out of time, but we'll have you back with us at the end of the session, and we'll see how we fared. But I would also encourage our listeners to pray for your representatives and senators at the state and federal level, and also your local elected officials, because they certainly need the wisdom of the Lord God Almighty as they continue to serve us.
Kathy, you've said it all. Thanks for having me.
If you or someone you know is in a crisis pregnancy, help is just a phone call away. Call 877-791-5475. If you or someone you know is dealing with grief and pain after an abortion decision, whether you had an abortion, convinced someone else to have an abortion, or even participated in a procedure, call 877-791-5475. You'll be referred to a pregnancy resource center in your area, a place where free and confidential services are available. That's 877-791-5475. 877-791-5475.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program, or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to iChooseLife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.